episode 11.
Welcome to your absolutely 100% most favorite podcast that has ever been recorded on the internet or even the radio. And from the three super geeky and exceptionally awesome founders of Bopoly, I'm really going for it this time. If we don't live up to the hype that I have just generated, I think this is going to be very disappointing for people. So everybody get your game face on. We can just dispense with the formalities. My name is Jonathan, and I am amazing.
I'm Vidya, and I'm overwhelmed. But let's just move on to Chris. Go ahead.
I'm Chris. I'm not overwhelmed. I'm feeling good. All is well on my neck of the woods.
Is this the time where we spend every week just, in summer camp, you had to, take the stick and then talk about your feelings? Is that it?
Nope.
Oh. Okay, I'm glad I asked.
We'll just say yes. We'll just say that this is absolutely that time. And also we'll have updates about whether or not you can eat the waffles in the cafeteria. That'll be an important part of this process from here on out. We can sing the song and salute the flag. Oh my gosh, this is going to be amazing.
That's great.
Tell ghost stories about
badges.
Cabin 4.
That's awesome.
We totally can. We should get our beer drinking badges first, because that's what I did at summer camp as a 12-year-old.
Archery, then beer, then archery again.
Right.
Absolutely. Those two things. And then your EMS badge.
Yeah,
your
first aid
badge. Absolutely. This is how you remove an arrow from an eye.
I always imagined my favorite part of those things is imagining the kids or the dads or the parents sewing those things. Just picturing.
What?
You know those badges? They're like little paper, not paper, they're like little patchet things.
Like
right?
Boy Scout badges? That's what
we're
talking about?
That's what we got.
Okay.
You mean selling the patches on the black
Isn't
market?
Like the first badge you get, the sewing badge, so you can put on other badges? Isn't that
That would be the strategic move, but I don't know. Good point.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure mine was gluing wooden popsicle sticks together. I think I got a badge for that.
What was that badge called? Just so we're clear. That,
I really don't remember.
Structural engineer.
Yeah, I was the worst Cub Scout ever. By the time I got to the Weeblos, see, this is very specific. All of the non-Americans are what the hell are they talking about right now?
Mm-hmm. They,
us, the foreigners, the actual Americans with this weird cultural thing that we do where we all band together and go to camp and make crafts and shoot weapons in the woods. So we should get started with some beer. Bid, what are you drinking?
I am drinking some lovely chamomile tea because I am still on my detox, which I love. I am enjoying it. And I will
talk
more
about
it.
That's not what people say
about detoxes. No, I love it. I do love it. I'll talk about it more in my segment of the show. Go on. Next.
All right. Chris, I'm assuming that you're drinking green tea in order to
That's
maintain.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Okay. No, this week I've stepped it up with Kostlin Kirkland tequila.
Ooh.
Because it was really cheap and awesome. Everyone says
that
Costco liquor.
Horrible.
No. Costco alcohol is supposed to be solid. And
Who said that?
No one said that. No, it's whatever. I've heard that it's supposed to be solid. It tastes like tequila. I don't know. Whatever. It's huge. I have this, it's like a vase full of tequila. It is a massive bottle. I think it's 2 liters. It's huge.
That has never been the appropriate way to judge alcohol and its quality. It comes in a massive container and it was cheap.
Anyway, it's a lot of tequila and I'm working my way through it. Ever so slowly, because it's a lot.
Okay. My beer did not come from Costco. I'm actually drinking beer. How am I the only one drinking? Okay, whatever. So I'm drinking. So
because I've evolved past
you've,
beer. I'm
you've
moving
evolved
on.
Past. That's
rubbing evolved. Alcohol next week.
Exactly. You're if it's not a commodity, I don't want to put it in my stomach. So I think I mentioned on the show last week that Mobcraft is this brewery
where they basically crowdsource the recipes for the different beers that they make. And this week, I'm drinking a beer again from Mobcraft called Dat Dark Sour. That's Dat with a D, because
that's cool.
That it is. That's cool. Next week, I'll be drinking Dat's on Fleek. But this week is just Dat Dark Sour. It's delicious. I mean, it's a sour beer and it's dark, so you can pretty much imagine the rest from there. But it's awesome, as one would expect. So moving swiftly on to a very important segment of our show, about our sponsor. Guys, we have a sponsor.
Yay!
And I'm very excited about this, as I'm sure are all of our listeners, because this sponsor is Shopify. And Shopify, as probably everybody knows the website Shopify, but basically like 250,000 businesses around the world use them to sell their stuff online and offline, which is amazing. But more relevant to our listeners, I think, is that they are hiring data people. Like gangbusters, they're hiring data people. So their data team, they currently already have like 70 people working on data stuff, which is awesome. And they're basically their senior VP of data was the director of analytics at Netflix before he went to Shopify. So they're playing for serious, y'all. And they have tons of cool stuff going on, and basically at any given time, they're analyzing customer support transcripts, which is pretty cool. They're like basically using NLP and machine learning to guide their product roadmap. They're doing some A/B testing stuff, which is cool, especially if you like experiment design. You can basically help their merchants predict when they're going to run out of stock, which is kind of a cool problem. And they're working with a hipster technology stack, Kafka, Spark Streaming, PySpark, Python in the house, high five, and... just a few of the jobs that they have open right now for infrastructure, for DevOps, like Hadoop administration, data engineering, building data pipelines, new features for Shopify. You can actually build production code, which is pretty cool. And, of course, analysis and scientists. So analyzing data, of course. Also, and this is – so when we were talking about this on the Twitters, as we do acknowledge our sponsors on the Twitter, somebody joked because – Shopify will help people with the immigration process so that they can move to beautiful Ottawa, Canada. And that's actually not part of the plug. Ottawa is beautiful. It really is a beautiful city in Canada. And there's been an increased interest, particularly from Americans, in moving to Canada in recent months. Somebody joked. They said, hey, you know, it sounds kind of like you're making a Donald Trump joke there. And I would like to point out for everybody that, you know, objectively, given our, you know, status in the community and our reputations as journalists, that we cannot take sides.
No, we're neutral. We're Switzerland.
We are like Switzerland, and of course we are making a Donald Trump joke. Like, if worse comes to worse and you need to move to Canada, data scientist, this is your opportunity. Get out while you can.
Yeah, every man for themselves.
And you can go work for Shopify. So there you go. For real, actually, go check out Shopify's website. Go to the career section. We'll link to it from the blog post that goes with this episode. We will also be talking about it on Twitter. It does sound like a fantastic opportunity if you're into data stuff. So go check it out. And with that, my friends, I think we're ready to talk about some news. Should we do it?
Let's do it.
Oh, yes.
Oh, man. I feel like I shouldn't now, because that was like... All right.
Oh,
whatever.
Sorry. Just, we need to be more energetic about this. Yeah. Yes!
Yay!
Okay.
Yes, we are ready for the news. Go, Jonathan. I'm so excited. Okay, go.
That is the ringing endorsement I was hoping for. I feel kind of like, you know, when a, like, well, Chris, you'll discover this soon. Vid, you may or may not discover this in the future. Any parent with toddler-aged children knows this experience where it, like, what we just did was kind of eerily familiar to the cadence of a child, like a performer for children. Like, they get up in front of the library of kids with their little guitar and they're going to sing songs about like hugging each other and peace and love and stuff. And then like, and they're like, kids, are you ready? And of course all the toddlers are like, I don't know what's going on because I barely have language. Yeah. And they're like, thanks kids. I'm so excited that you're excited. And the kids like aren't excited because, you know, they're barely sentient. And then they go and play their songs. So I feel like that's what's going on now.
All right, fine. We are excited. Damn it.
All right, whatever. All right. Let's move on. I think because the first thing we're talking about is very important. It's about breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to I'm going to come right out and say it. I am a breakfast food person. Basically, you can give me some bacon, some super rich, heavy, eggy thing. You can put it all on top of a waffle, maybe with some fried chicken, and I will eat that at any time of day or night. Actually, the cool thing, here in Austin, we have two special kinds of breakfast foods that everybody who visits should totally check out because you probably don't have them in whatever, like, lame-ass expensive city you live in. The first... okay, I'm just joking. I love all of you guys, but you don't have breakfast
Ottawa,
tacos.
The greatest city ever.
You know what they... Actually, for real, I mean, definitely move to Ottawa. Get out while you can. That I stand by that statement. But what Ottawa doesn't have is the breakfast taco. This is something that we have in Austin. It is it's just what it sounds like. Eggs, beans, cheese, sausage, bacon, anything that you'd eat for breakfast, all wrapped in a tortilla, optionally with some hot sauce. It's like a convenience wrapper for your brunch. It's amazing. We also have migas. So these are like a little bit harder to describe than breakfast tacos. It's like Tex-Mex eggs. I guess basically it's like the breakfast taco without the tortilla, but then topped with these little Frito chips. You know, like Fritos, those like the yellow, like salty, crispy chips. Yeah, totally. Those like super greasy. They smell like new tennis balls. Like everybody knows what Fritos are.
You had me all the way up until new tennis. I've had a lot of Fritos. What Fritos? Whatever.
I'm so confused about this. I never knew about this. I've been visiting all this time and we've never had this. Migas.
Migas. Oh my goodness. Oh, next time you're here, migas. It's like it's up there with queso of things that one
should eat.
Nothing
can come close to queso.
When I don't. we can put some queso on the migas, and then it'll be amazing. I'll be honest. I think probably from my description, it sounds gross, but it's delicious. Anyway, the point of the story. Well, actually, before we get to the story, do you guys know what I had for breakfast this morning? Just go ahead. Just ask me.
Migas.
Yeah.
No,
new tennis balls. What was the thing?
Fried chicken on waffles.
All of those sound delicious. I did have waffles, actually, but I didn't just have any waffle. I had a waffle in the shape of Texas.
Oh, my God.
This is like the requirement of Texas.
This is at home?
There's always like some Texas-shaped thing going on.
There is often Texas-shaped things. I mean, in Austin, all the Texas stuff is a little bit ironic. We're sort of like, oh, yeah, we're in Texas. Isn't that funny? That's why we have a Texas-shaped waffle iron.
Wait, at home?
At home. At my house. Well, I mean, if you're going to have a waffle maker, why just settle for the round one? You can have one that is shaped
well,
like...
Well, I mean, it's because if your state is shaped like California, like, if you do it a little off, it's like, it'd be not child-friendly.
That's true. There are no California or Florida-shaped waffle makers. Yeah, don't eat that peninsula. Okay, so breakfast is great. And for years, this is the important part, scientists have been telling us that breakfast is one of, if not the most important meal of the day. Now, this is awesome because when I eat that fourth piece of bacon or fried chicken on my waffle, I think to myself, you know, this is the most important thing I could be doing right now for my health. It's like doing a bunch of push-ups or running 5 miles. This is what my body needs. Turns out that is absolutely not true. Not just that, you know, you don't get any health benefits from eating a crap ton of bacon, but more that researchers pretty much screwed up this whole breakfast thing from the beginning.
What?
Yes.
I don't believe this already. I don't want to believe, I think.
I know.
I love
you
breakfast.
Know, that kind of inherent bias against reason is one of the things that caused this problem in the first place.
Oh, because everyone truly loves breakfast. Like, why does science have to go ruin it?
Totally. Just like I love burning fossil fuels. I just want to do it all the time.
All right. I mean, is breakfast like creating impending doom for the planet Earth? No.
No. It probably has nothing to do with that. I mean, I'm sure somebody could make an argument that it is. That like all of the bacon or the sausage that we consume is from cows, and when cows fart, that puts methane into the ozone,
right,
and then we're all gonna die. But
right.
I don't think so. This is not really about the environment. I've kind of gone off on a tangent. But okay.
We started with Texas breakfasts, then waffle irons. Now
this is a
now if cows are causing global warming.
Yeah, with their farts. This is a real thing.
This is a story of tangents. I love it. It's very creative.
But we'll get back. This is we're getting to the meat and potatoes, the eggs and sausage of the story, if you will.
Okay.
So Aaron Carroll in the New York Times is the person responsible for bursting your bubble, Vid. He notes that not only has skipping breakfast been linked to obesity, but also heart disease. And this link is made so often that it seemed like there was more or less a consensus in the scientific community, right? That's what I assumed. And that's wrong, apparently. And that in and of itself is not why I'm bringing this up. I think this is worth pointing out. Scientific theories are modified or outright disproved all the time. That's the point of science, to keep learning, right? So there's no harm in having, you know, publishing research that's later refuted. It's okay. Fail fast, science. But I'm bringing this up because the research that led to this commonly accepted idea, you know, that breakfast is the most important meal of the day, it seems to have fallen into one of the most common traps that's highlighted for everyone who's just getting into statistics in big, bold, flashing letters. Wait for it. Correlation does not equal causation. Yes, it's such a common refrain from stats people that I'm sure all of our listeners already know this. And after a moment's reflection, it's pretty obvious, right? So, like, for example, if there are higher rates of depression in the Northwest U.S., there are also higher rates of grunge bands per capita in that part of the country. Are we to infer that grunge music causes depression? Nah, never mind. Ha! You see what I did? Never mind. Never mind.
Oh, my God.
This is horrible. This is all horrible.
Yeah, you're right.
Do you save them up every week? I do. Like, do you have a little notebook somewhere that you're just like jotting these things down?
Totally. When you see that bearded guy in the coffee shop in Austin looking thoughtfully into his moleskin notebook and writing things, just know that I'm writing lame puns. That's what I'm doing, and saving them up for the podcast. So all apologies, everybody. I didn't. Oh, I got you again. Okay.
I don't even get that.
All apologies? Don't you? I mean, I don't actually remember the tune. It was a Nirvana song. Oh. Kurt Cobain, he sang it on MTV Unplugged. It's the one where he's just basically like, wah, 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 wah. Like, I mean, that's all of the Nirvana songs. But like, anyway, it's a famous song. If you like Nirvana, who? We'll leave that to the side. Okay, so the problem gets any.
That was the one topic that we'll leave to the side. One topic. Everything else is
some places. Some places we just can't go. Totally, we will give a full-throated endorsement of moving to Canada if Donald Trump gets elected president. But I will not defame Nirvana on this podcast. that's a tribal boundary I just can't cross. So the problem with this whole breakfast fiasco, it goes deeper than allowing inherent bias, which in this case is the assumption that breakfast was important to begin with, that led researchers to misdescribe correlation. So, and by the way, correlation, just in case, correlation, the fact that two things occur together, right, versus causation, that one of those things causes the other. Okay, so apparently the design of the experiment itself was also flawed. Almost none of the research was based on randomized control trials, so it's unlikely that the data researchers captured was ever going to explain the phenomenon that they were studying in the first place. And this is before we even get to the fact that food companies funded all of the research. also a problem. Mm. But anyway, I mean, the takeaway is that we really have no idea whether or not breakfast matters to your health, in spite of this public consensus, this widely accepted idea. So eat breakfast, don't eat breakfast, whatever. Do what you want and don't feel bad about it. But as data people, I think it's worth pointing out how difficult it actually is to remove bias from your work, right? As much as we're making fun of the researchers, that is actually, it is really difficult because everybody comes with a set of assumptions and it's hard to see them. That's the whole idea of bias. And because of that, it's crucial that your experiments are designed properly, because even though most of us aren't doing pure research, our jobs are basically applying the scientific method to business problems, right? So This is a reminder that we shouldn't get sloppy with the science, or I guess go ahead and get as sloppy as you want with the science. Just realize that when you do, the output is not super useful. Also, yeah, that's a good chicken point. And waffles.
I think it's, you know, like, building scientific experiments is really, really hard, it turns out. Like, it's just, it's a hard thing to isolate the factors that you want to get, like, the right kind of group. And all these scientific studies are done within, like, limitations of resources. So, like, the stuff that I was sort of working on when I was getting my PhD was done with college students, because those were the people that we could get into the room to do experiments on. Like, that means that you have to do stuff with college students, and then from that try to figure out some general thing about society. And you do that through, like, trying to, you know, control things in various ways and shape things in various ways. And it's hard. It's hard. There's no, like, I if any single time I see some kind of science thing that, like, someone did poorly, I don't know if these people did it poorly, but, like, you know, anything like that, I just feel for them. It's like, it is so hard to do that at, like, a really, really high bar, that, you know, people get it wrong all the time. Like, yeah. And I got it wrong in places. So, like, no judgment from me. We call them theories.
Isn't science just built off of lots of bad experiments, though? I mean, like, there's lots of things that people have thought that have been since disproven. But I think that it's not so much that it's like, I like what you said earlier, Jonathan, that is really the point of science, is to just try and see what happens. And the fact that we spent, I don't know how many decades, like, everybody's, like, making sure their kid is fed before they leave, you know, like, that's not bad, right? Like, okay, maybe like, the kid isn't going to get heart disease because he didn't have breakfast, but at least the parent had something to justify, like, their decision to feed their kids and make sure that the kids get fed. I don't know. I think that, like, I don't think there's anything bad. Also, I think that we all love breakfast. Breakfast might not be important, like, the most important, but it is so delicious that, like, what is the problem? There's no problem. It is important because it is delicious. I think that works out fine.
I like that, the artist perspective, you know? If the aesthetics are good, then it has meaning on its own merits.
I mean, we walk around and do, like, you know, where Chris is drinking tequila because of its natural inherent merits. I don't know.
That's exactly why I'm doing it. I just look at that gigantic vase of tequila, and I'm like, that's why. Natural merits. Kirkland.
Yeah, actually, you know what? I feel like I should point out that, because you mentioned the kids thing, that there is evidence that kids who eat breakfast do better in school. But I think that's because you don't want to be hungry when you're trying to learn. But that's, like, a separate issue from this idea that there's a negative impact on your, like, physical health. It just, you know, you might be a little bit if you're the kind of person who does need to consume some calories in the morning, you might be a little bit, you know, dumb if you don't. right. But that's a separate thing.
That's just, if you're hungry, eat. I mean, that doesn't take science.
That's true. Our innate biology should take care of that. Otherwise, that'd be kind of an evolutionary flaw, I think.
Right.
You know, there's a species that makes it until the first time they get hungry, and so, who knows how they made it this far.
All right. Well, my story this week is actually also about food. So we have, like, a food theme. Hey, Vid, if yours is about, you know, detoxing,
it might be.
This is a food episode. Totally, actually, by random, we have created a food episode. Here we go. All right. So this story is totally one that I love. It's from my own heart. So I'm from California, and we take our burritos very seriously. We even have a specific type of burrito that we call our own, the glorious California burrito, allegedly made so surfers could quickly replenish their calories after, you know, like, a morning session. It's great. It's a really nice burrito. It's also the exact burrito you get at Chipotle every single time. That's a California burrito, that, like, brick like toilet paper roll of food. Anyway, all right, so Scott Cole, the hero of our story, is a neuroscience PhD student at UC Davis and a big burrito fan, which, obviously, if you're from, you know, San Diego, you're probably a big burrito fan. And he has a big interest in finding the best burrito that he can have. But Scott is also a researcher. So
I love Scott.
He has applied his research methods to explore how to have the best burrito, like, what makes the best burrito.
Oh, that sounds like a PhD to me.
Why aren't all PhDs like this? Useful.
So what he did is he started a little project to collect data, as in eat a burrito, at various Mexican places around town. And he collected 10 variables about each burrito And then in addition, he collected an overall quality rating of that burrito. So, like, he ordered a burrito, he did a bunch of measurements about the burrito, and then he, like, ate the burrito, and then he, like, rated how much on a, like, a 1-to-5 scale of how he liked the burrito.
Okay. I'm just enjoying the idea of this guy, like, buying a burrito, sitting in wherever restaurant he was, pulling out, like, a tape measure and be like, yes. Everything's, no, I'm not upset. Oh. The burrito's fine.
It gets good.
This gets good. Science.
Okay, so how far he went on this, we'll just go for, like, one measurement. So the first measurement, the first variable is volume. So, right, he wanted to know the volume of the burrito. So this is literally a quote from what he published. First, before any part of the burrito was consumed, a tape measure was extended in the front of the burrito, and the length of the burrito proper portion of the burrito with approximately the same circumference as the center was measured with a precision of 5 millimeters. Second, the tape measure was wrapped under the center of the burrito to record the circumference. An estimate of the burrito volume was then calculated using these two measures. That is a direct quote. So that was his first one. Volume of the burrito. And he is actually taking out a tape measure and measuring the burrito. I did actually look at his data. He does actually have measurements of burritos in there. Tortilla quality is the second variable that he's going to. Temperature. So these are on 1-to-5 scales. So he's got, like, 1-to-5 on tortilla quality, 1-to-5 on temperature, 1-to-5 on meat quality, non-meat filling quality, meat to filling ratio. The uniformity, which I guess is, like, how much of your bite is, like, if you have a bite that's only sour cream and your next bite is, like, only meat, you know, like, that's bad uniformity.
Yeah.
Salsa quality. Flavor synergy, which I'm not actually certain what in the world that means. That's very...
Yeah, the rest of them sounded like objective measures, but that one,
and wrap integrity, which is, of course, important. So eventually he actually got 30 people to collect data on 104 burritos at 31 restaurants. And I took a look at his data. It's great. And we'll also link to it. And you can actually give him your own data. So you could go eat a burrito, measure the 10 variables and your overall score, and actually send him data, and it'll be included in the data set. So you can help science, right? Sort of science, right now. Okay. So first, we'll have some descriptive statistics about what he figured out about burrito. 29% of taco shops provided free chips, which is, I think, about right. That's good in my experience. The average burrito was about $7 before tax, which is like a California price right there. And interesting. Those are cool. But I'm certain that some of you heard the variables that I was describing and know exactly what's going to come next, because we have 10 inputs about a burrito, right? Like flavor quality, meat filling ratio, uniformity, blah, blah, blah. And we have one output, which is, you know, his overall rating. And that is a setup for model building right there, which is entirely what Scott did. So he set up a linear model to figure out which of those characteristics of the burrito had the greatest effect on the overall rating, which is sort of which of the 10 variables best predicted the burrito's overall score. And here it is. Here is, based on a very minimal sample, but whatever, here is the things that were most important. Non-meat filling, meat, salsa, and the ratio of meat to non-meat filling. Those are the four things that will determine what your score is, which I think is, you know what I like about this? I like that two of them, or probably three of them, are not related to the meat, because in my experience, the non-meat filling and, like, the, you know, like the pico or the whatever they have, if there's not too much rice and all that stuff, that is the most important part of a burrito. And then the meat's like, okay, cool, fine, whatever. Like, you can have crappy meat in a burrito and you're fine. But if you have, like, crappy other ingredients, it sucks. So I'm totally in favor of this. These things, these feel right to me. And if I ever have a burrito, I'm going to submit my thing. But I will say, joking aside, he actually wrote the entire, it's sort of, I guess it would be a post, but it's written as if it's a scientific paper. And he's using sort of the, you know, the basic scientific techniques, right? Like simple techniques, but solid techniques. And he provides the data set and he provides all the code. And, you know, like he explains everything really clearly. And if you ever, you know, like if you wanted to introduce yourself to how to work with data, or say introduce your kid for like how to work with like things in science, his, like, joking aside, this is actually a great guide to do so, because everyone's really familiar with burritos. You can go and try out, you know, like measure a burrito, try it out, look at his stuff. He explains exactly what he's doing. I think the only part of it that might get someone who had no experience with data is the idea that you can isolate the effects of each different variables, like meat versus non-meat. And like, that's a stepping stone to your next part of your learning journey. But I think it's an awesome kind of like first step into how we figure things out with data, how we collect data, how we tend to be try to be rigorous, the problems that we come at. I think it's perfect. I love it. I totally love it. And then you know, you go from this and you figure this out, and then you would like move on to, you know, root, square, mean errors and Monte Carlo or whatever you want to do next. But like I love it as an introduction to science. That wasn't probably his point, but I would recommend it as well.
So I guess the takeaway here, though, is that the thing that determines whether or not you like the burrito is its ingredients, right? That's the conclusion.
Yeah, none of the let's see, what are the other ones? No tortilla quality. No one cared about temperature. Well, wrap integrity. Flavor synergy. I really would like to see the coefficient on flavor synergy. I don't have it right now, but like that is a weird metric right now. But like I think like size, like the idea that volume doesn't matter. Like I think these are important things to know.
Yeah, all right. I'll give you that. There are some things that might have, you know, been significant in the model. Turns out that they're not. That's fair. And I do think, joking aside, I think I agree with you. It's super cool. It's a cool way to teach science, because I think we find this all the time, that familiarity with the data set actually is, I mean, in reality, it's called subject matter expertise. We all have subject matter expertise when it comes to burritos, assuming that we eat them. It really is really meaningful in understanding the output of a model or a data set. So that's cool. It's a nice, I dig it. It's a nice way to understand the basics of statistics. Very cool.
Yeah. Well, the thing that I can't get out of my head is just imagining, like, if you get the most amazing meat in the world, the most amazing non-meat filling, the best salsa of, like, in all of Mexico, and then the ratio is like perfectly dialed in, but it's wrapped in a newspaper.
it's just like a pile of crap.
Yeah, but it's like such good stuff inside. What this is saying is that would be equivalent to like a mediocre burrito that doesn't have like the best of everything else.
I think you'd be saying that if you were going to see what really mattered, like, I don't think you can fail in any of the qualities. That's what I suspect. I mean, I'd have to go look at it. But, like, I suspect if you didn't have a tortilla on it, then you wouldn't qualify as a burrito. So you probably wouldn't be in the burrito category.
Oh, okay.
But, like, if you have a burrito that's, like, wrapped poorly, but it still has really good ingredients, according to, like, you know, like, this 31 data, which is, like, if anyone wants to know, this is like the minimum you should ever possibly use for any kind of analysis is about 30. That's the sort of rule of thumb. And like in this kind of thing, like, yeah, so maybe you have like a horrible tortilla. It's cold. It has no flavor synergy, but you have amazing ingredients. Like, yeah, that'd probably be a good burrito.
That'd still be good enough. Okay, that's awesome.
I really have no idea what flavor synergy is. Yeah, that's weird.
Because it's kind of like relative change in burrito quality, right? It's not like... You know.
Right. It's not like comparing to, you know, a burger. It's not like, right. It's within the family of burritos.
With a steak.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's awesome. Okay. So I'm getting all hungry for this and being, well, okay. Let me get back to what I was trying to say.
So you're going to, my store is going to be on detoxing? Like, yeah. It's a,
yeah. Okay. So I will, let me take a step back. Let me start with like a bigger, like a broader enlightening truth, okay? Happiness is the jam. That's why we're here. This is the drug that we're all on the fix for, right?
Okay, that's deep, but yeah. Go on, sure.
Yeah, I mean, don't you agree? Is that, are we all on the same
page? For a
second,
I thought you meant like jam, like, because you were talking about food and you were going with jam, and I was really confused for a second, but now I got it.
Oh, God. Okay.
that's like one of those signs where you see like in a dusty antique shop when it's like happiness is a good jam.
Yeah, exactly. No.
And they actually mean like fruit squished in a jar.
Okay. So no, I meant it's the jam, like it's awesome, it's badass, happiness is like winner.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, I can see that.
Emojis, yeah, like memes, like that's all good things. Right. So and this is the reason why we get into wars and fight and make money and have babies and build buildings and do all these uniquely, infinitely unique human things that we do. That's why we do it. I think that's why we do it. And so I recently stumbled into something that I believe makes me happy. I'm sure it makes me happy. It will. Detoxing. Detoxing does. Really, it does make me happy.
I took a left turn there really fast.
Yeah, because, you know, it's a thing. It's like a whole month. I'm probably down, like, I'm like 1 week in. It hasn't been that long, sadly. I haven't been that good about it, but I do enjoy it. It's hard to believe, but it feels good to, like, pretend to be like a supermodel from time to time and drink a lot of water with lemon, you know, no caffeine, no alcohol, no sugary drinks, work out a lot. It's great.
It's kind of like the thought of starting to detox makes you happy. That's
Well, it does feel good. It does feel good, kind of. It does. I love it. I love feeling this way. Okay. And you know you'd love it too. Like, everyone will love feeling good and working out and doing the right thing with their health. And so I say all of this as a preamble to my story to set the context, you know, to remind myself very firmly that I am doing the right good thing that I should be doing. I should definitely not stop my amazing life-changing detoxing. In fact, you both should get on a detox because it's so great.
This seems like a little bit of evangelism here. But come on now. Come on now.
I just try it.
Hold on. I just have a few sips left of this that dark beer.
Damn it.
Give me
damn
a second.
You. Damn you. All right. So just always do good health, you know, healthy, right things. That's what I'm trying to set the context for. All right. Now to the story.
Okay.
Scientists have figured out exactly how much fun it is to get drunk.
Hey, here we go. Right at the meat of the story here.
Right.
Science.
I mean, I don't know if the detoxing is like making me drool a little bit more, but this story was not what I needed to read right now, but it's okay. It's a really great story. So more specifically, drinking alcohol is associated with considerably greater happiness at that moment. And that's 10.79 points on a 0 to 100 scale. That's the number of points higher.
Whoa.
That your happiness
is. They asked drunk people this? They were like, are you happy right now? And people were like, you know it, buddy!
Kind of. Kind of, yes. I mean, that's almost like, that's a lot happier, you know? And I know what you're thinking. Like, people usually drink when they're doing other fun things. Like, you're hanging out with your friends or watching sports or on a podcast and, like, enjoying your life. And so is it really, you know, the fact that you're doing fun things that make you happier on their own? Wouldn't they be automatically happier just because they're doing those things? Is it really the alcohol, a known depressant, that makes people happier? Well, that's a good question. And these scientists...
I was actually thinking how, like, if you had a bunch of college students come and do an experiment, you're like, we're going to give you free booze, how much happier they would be. It'd probably be like 10.79%.
Yeah. Well,
at least. I think this is conservative. This is a conservative.
I know. I was a little bit underwhelmed, but yes. So the scientists are totally on top of this. When they controlled for these kind of unbooze related fun things, and people's happiness levels dropped, yes, dropped from 11 down to 4 points. Still, there's still 4 points of a boost of happiness. That's an actual spike of fun from something you can go out and buy and put into your body and, like, move the needle on happiness. If you ever want to be 4 points higher in happiness, scientists say alcohol can deliver. That's what science
says. Already. Totally down for this.
This is awesome. This is like a slow infomercial for like alcohol.
Heroin, 17.5%.
It is. Just imagine what it's like to be on detox and go through this story. Okay. So here's what the scientists did. They started with an app. Like every other 15-year-old dreamer in the world, the scientists too. At the London School of Economics, so began with an app that they called...
That is where they did this research? I was expecting this to be at, like, you know, Liverpool University or something.
No.
I hope. I sincerely hope some of our listeners go to that university now. But the London School of Economics...
I know, they're legit.
This is a serious institution. All right, so I believe it even more now.
I know.
Alcoholism for the win.
Seriously. Well, they started with an app, which is awesome. Like, what if all scientists just start with an app? So they call this app... Mappiness. I don't know why it's got a map involved with the happiness. Yep.
I don't totally get
that, but maybe.
Because they were drunk. They were like, it's a mappiness, dudes. That's the best name I've ever thought
so
of.
So that is already awesome, is the name of this app. It's free. You can download it onto your iPhones, and it pings you randomly throughout the day to ask you how happy you are, along with a bunch of other questions like who are you with, what you might be doing at the time. And they got 2 million responses from over 30,000 people.
Whoa.
And I know, that is a lot of people. So this isn't just college students. They analyzed the data to see what effect drinking might have on people's happiness levels. And here are my three favorite discoveries from this study. And they're my favorite because they are so freaking obvious. I love science for this. Okay, number one discovery. It doesn't matter when and who you drink with. It getting sloshed will boost your happiness every time.
Can you imagine that question on the app? Like, it pops up, like, are you drinking? You're like, yes. Are you drinking with people? Yes. Do you like them? No.
Or I love the follow-up, though. I love the follow-up. Are you drinking? Yes. Are you alone? Ooh.
Yeah. What are you wearing? Okay, so that was the one, that no matter where you are, who you drink with, alcohol works. Number two is that drinking had a different impact on your happiness depending on what you're doing while you're drinking. So if you're doing things that you don't like to do, like boring blah shit, like, you know, waiting in line. I don't know why you wouldn't do that while you're waiting in line. But
that's amazing.
This is England, after all. It's probably true.
Cool,
right?
Cool.
So you're waiting in line, you know, at the grocery store, and you're drinking. And it will have the highest impact on your happiness when you're doing things that you don't like to do. And while it still increases happiness while you're doing things you already enjoy, it doesn't boost your joy levels as much.
Oh, that's nice. I like that.
That's cool. Because it prevents you from doing the things that you don't want to do. You're like trying to study for an exam. No, I'm drinking.
Yeah, that's, I like that. But if you're like, I do this all the time. If well, I shouldn't say that. Never mind. I'm not going to say that. I'll
She's detoxing, guys. She's officially detoxing.
I'm officially detoxing.
Drink three glasses of rosé last night.
And I do not drink at conferences that are boring. That is also not what I do.
Yeah. No, I can totally see this, because like where I really have like a ritual around drinking is when I cook dinner, because I cook dinner every night, and like I don't really enjoy cooking. I'm like fine with cooking, like, because I like to eat good food, but I'm not like, oh, this is amazing, I want to cook. But like, you have like a glass of wine, and while you're cooking, and like, it really does help things. I feel like,
yeah,
that is a very solid like, that feels right in my head.
Yeah, it increases the levels of happiness when you're... But note, remember when they originally controlled it before they controlled for, you know, whether the thing you're doing was already fun? That was 11 points. So there's like 7 points of happiness that you get from doing things you like to do.
No, I mean...
So...
That makes sense. If I was skydiving, I wouldn't need to like have a glass of whiskey with me. I mean, that'd be amazing. But, like, I don't know how I'd do that.
I think that's exactly when you want a glass of whiskey.
I think so too. Yes.
I am jumping out of a plane. My happiness level is like -7 right now.
Yeah. Okay. So the third discovery is, okay, do you think that people who are already happy, or like they're just generally happy people, drink more? Like, maybe they're the ones that like tend to kind of be that way. It's their personalities. It's really not the alcohol. Or is it the people that are drinking become happier, make their happiness levels go up? So they controlled for this.
Let me get this straight. Do happy people drink, or do drinking people be happy?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, I need to like get that right in my head.
Yeah. Don't worry, be happy. Just drink.
Just drink. Yeah, I'm going to go with happy people drink. That's what I'm going to go with this one.
Well, the study looked at how happy people reported being like earlier in the day before they were drinking, you know, like in their day-to-day lives. And after controlling for that, the researchers found that the drinking had a slightly smaller boost on overall happiness, but the effect was still significant. So, I guess you're right, kind of-ish, but also not.
Well, it means that we can all benefit from drinking. That's what it means. Right?
Yes. Yeah, a little bit.
I think it does. Yeah.
It does.
At least a little bit.
At least
yeah,
a little
I
bit.
I like that.
Yeah. And so this... So I kind of understand why it's so tempting for people, you know, to use alcohol to cope with things that are not as cool. But like, this explains that. Like I said, these are all like obvious things, but it just sort of affirms
no, no,
the
no,
thing
I
that
love
you
it
think
that
is
they
already
have a number
true.
Down, right?
Yeah.
I love it that they've controlled for everything else, because like, it actually makes me think about alcohol in a different way, because basically what you're saying is like, no matter what, you'll at least get a 4-point boost. But
yes.
That means that like, when people are like, I have had a tough, horrible day, I just want a freaking beer. Like, what they're really saying is, like, I just want to be a little bit, like, my level is pretty low. I just want a quick artificial boost of at least 4 points, like, that yes. I can buy over the counter. Like, I could have more points if I was bubbly and also went to the gym 14 times a week. But just for now, just in the next half an hour, I just want to, like, reach into my fridge and be 4 points happier. I think that is a cool way of thinking about alcohol. I mean, troubling, but cool, cool.
It is troubling because that could be the beginning of, like, a downward spiral into, you know, the depths of despair. So I also wanted to point out, I think it is important that before they controlled for people doing things that brought them happiness on its own, that was like 7 points. That's way bigger than the 4 points of alcohol. So, kids, do not drink excessively. Go do fun things because that'll bring you more happiness by drink, you know, instead of drinking. But if you drink while you're doing it, that's even better.
That's really. I loved that for a second. This was like when Zach Morris and Jesse Spano like, turned to the camera yeah. and they're like, hey, but seriously. And then you just threw it all away. Yeah, you're like, actually, yeah. just kidding, you guys.
You should totally go to the gym. And really yeah. work out and be the better. Also drinking, because it gains you at least 4 points, so it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, why wouldn't you want, you know, a little help when you can get it? And
have your cake and eat it, too.
And or drink it. I think it's also important that if you're doing things that you don't enjoy, then it has the highest impact. Maybe that's why detoxing is so amazing. Because the next time I drink, it will be amazing. Because the contrast will be so huge.
You mean you're like you've become used to a general level of unhappiness that like when you drink, it'll be such a boost.
God, I didn't mean it that way. But yes, that does sound accurate. No, I love detoxing. Aww. I love it. What are you talking about? Stop. I love it.
So much that I'm going to drink my way right out of it.
I'll just talk about drinking. I mean, so far I've been mostly good. Last weekend I had one evening with friends that like totally went out of control. But other than that, I've been pretty great, which is awesome. Let's focus on the positives.
All right. Yeah. Congratulations on your sobriety. That's
thank
very
you. Oh, yeah.
All right. So before we go any further, speaking of people who were probably drunk when they did something, I found a YouTube video this week. I'm pretty sure from a bunch of grad students, because these are the only people who make these sorts of videos. It is, or drunk people. It's called Excel Funk Bunch, like the Funky Bunch, but about Excel functions. It's exactly what you think it is. It's a rap about advanced Excel usage.
Oh my God, I love it.
There are jokes about pivot tables. There's jokes about applying. There's jokes about Excel functions that I didn't know existed. It's amazing. You might even learn something. So let's just take a pause and let's listen to the Excel Funk Bunch get down with their bad Excel selves.
Cells! Get it?
Cells! Oh my God, that's even better. Okay. This is going to be even better because you made that joke. Let's do it.
This one's for that techie guy who sorts his data right on the fly. This one's for the analyst whose sheets are straight masterpieces. Pivots, functions, gotta slice the data up good. I got charts on it with conditional formatted. It's so pretty. It's too hard.
No, ma'am.
Hallelujah. Bar charts, hallelujah. Goal seek, hallelujah. Cause Excel Funk's gonna give it to ya. Cause Excel Funk's gonna give it to ya. Cause Excel Funk's gonna give it to ya. Just stack the lines and stack the plots. Don't believe me, just watch. Just watch.
patient. Count the sounds of count if you want to find something specific. It's not hard.
No way.
You can sort it up in a second, man. It's not hard.
You can.
Publish data and show your mama, man. It's not hard.
Oh, yeah.
I said share your name, go spread your fame. It's not hard.
Oh, damn.
Spreadsheet sales gonna give you that money. Break it down. Girls coding, yeah, booyah. Boys coding, yeah, booyah. Spreadsheets can't booyah.
Cause Excel funks won't give it to ya. Cause Excel funks gonna give it to ya. Cause Excel funks gonna give it to ya. Just tap the lines and scan the plots. And don't believe me, just watch. Don't believe me, just watch.
Before we leave, let me tell you a little story. It's about a little spreadsheet. Excel funk you up. I said Excel funk you up. Yeah, yeah. Excel funk you up. I said Excel funk you up. One more time now. Excel funk you up. Excel funk you up. I said Excel funk you up. Excel funk you up.
Come on, turn it on. Click on it. If you techie, then flown it. If you geeky, then own it.
All right, thank you, Excel Funk Bunch. you'll now go down in history as one of the many oddballs who rap about arcane math things and nerdy data stuff in the Partially Derivative archives. That's all we have this week. Huge thanks to Shopify, our sponsor. Go check them out at shopify.com and learn how you too can move to beautiful Ottawa and work on awesome data science projects and avoid the coming American apocalypse. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, you can follow us at Partially D. You can follow Vid at Vid_Spundana, Chris at Chris Albin, and of course, you can follow me at Jonathan Morgan. Of course, you can keep tabs on Poppoly, our awesome analytics platform, at Poppoly Team. And until next time, go to Ottawa, take a selfie with Justin Trudeau, work for Shopify, and we will see you next week. Thanks, everybody.
Bye, all.